Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Sherry Huber, who we thought it would be really fun to invite to continue the conversation of an email that you sent, Sherry, some weeks back regarding financial support for practice. So thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Well, it's a pleasure. Or as we learned this morning, I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to be here. Wasn't that lovely?
Yes. Changes so our lives.
It does. Just like every moment when we're here. you sent first just an extraordinary thank you to so many folks who read your letter. And I project, I think, a big piece of the perhaps writing the letter and certainly receiving it, those of us getting to read it, a big piece of it being that it's so great to get information that we may not have had. And that really opens us to, yes, I want to participate that way. So just beginning with a big thank you to so many people who did read the letter and were moved to do a number of the things that you said in the letter could make a difference for practice.
Well, yes, huge thank you. From the very beginning, I just tell the same stories over and over. It makes my life really easy when I do that. And when we first started the Zen Center in Mountain View, and we didn't charge for things, we didn't do fundraising, we didn't, any of that. And people would say, well, what's going to happen if nobody gives us any money? And, I said, well, it's easy. They'll take this house away, and then we'll all go do whatever we would do if we weren't running a Zen Center or starting a Zen Center. Mm. And so that's always been the attitude, that we only want to do this as long as it's of value to people. If people are benefiting, then people will support it. But interestingly, as you know, I'm now working on a communication book that I've said, regularly for the last 35 or 40 years, we got to write a book on communication. And what I see in it is a level of assumption that can happen that is along the lines of everybody understands that, what I just said, what that means, and what one's role might be in that. Right. And those are not obvious things.
Yes, exactly so. So that maybe not everyone is making that connection that, gosh, if I really want practice to continue and I'm receiving practice at whatever level I'm receiving practice, then I want to be contributing to help make that happen.
Well, yes, because, in most of life, if people want something from you, they ask. Right? So if somebody wants you to pay for something, you go down to that car dealer, and they make it clear that they're not going to give you that car unless you give them money. And so we're very used to that sort of thing. It doesn't often occur to us that because somebody isn't asking for money, that doesn't mean they might not need it. It just means they're not asking for it.
Really. I mean, and it's just so perfect. It's such a perfect practice because as you say, the assumptions get revealed in that. In this case, the need for the communication drops in. The communication goes out, and the response is, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Right, people, they get the information, and they want to participate in that way. And I
Right.
think,
right. Yeah. Well, that's right, because it just never occurred to me. It just never occurred to me. In the same way, Jen, before we move on, that it never occurred to us that there were these ways that we could really change our financial picture in little time, because I don't like to ask people for money. I just don't. I just don't. I don't think it's not that I think there's anything wrong with money. It's just that I don't want anybody ever to feel like they're buying spiritual practice. And there are lots of reasons for that, right? Number one, if I bought it, then it's mine. I own it. I can treat it the way I want, which is a really dangerous place to put ego, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't want somebody to feel like, well, I can't afford that, so I can't do it. Or I'm not able to contribute to the supportive practice, so I'll wait to do practice until I can afford to. No, we don't want any of that going on, right? Mm-hmm. So then we come up with these. I didn't. Bob did, and Ashwini did. Came up with these wonderful ways that, well, gosh, if all of the people who are monthly donors just gave an extra $2, that would take care of all of the transaction fees for donating by credit card. And gosh, if people switched over to this other way of electronic checks, or I don't even understand what that is, then those charges would go away, and we could save tons and tons of money without really kind of hurting anybody's pocketbook.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I loved about it. I'm looking at that list in front of me, but that place where, you know, you're not going to someone and saying, you know, sitting down with now, okay, your net worth and what's your, you know, we're going to take away.
Give us our 10%. Give us our 10% of everything you've got. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But instead, it's more that image of, you know, everyone bringing their whatever to the communal pot and pouring it in there and each of us doing our part and not assuming that someone else is going to do our part and also not assuming it's all up to me, but rather each of us doing what we want to do. And then there we have it. We have a practice that's supported, and that's my favorite thing, that story. I actually love it. Of, well, if people stop supporting practice, we'll stop having practice, because there's no reason in and of itself to have practice just for the sake of practice.
It's not a business. You know, it's not a business. So, of course, I guess with any business, you know, if people don't want sandwiches, the sandwich shop will go out of business. But with that, you know, the idea is, but it's somebody's business, and it's supporting them, and they're doing it so that they can make a living and save for their. But this is awareness practice. This is a whole different deal. And so, for that reason, we want it really to be in alignment. Everything about practice to be in integrity with practice.
You know, Sherry, one of the things that occurs to me, because I know one of the things that you said in the letter, which I really appreciated, is that we want to continue to have this be in awareness in this year. That's one of the things we really want to do, kind of have a conversation. Yeah. We're welcome to call in to open air or wherever and talk to you about it and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it occurs to me as part of that one of the things I've found moving over the years is you talk about the place.
In each of I don't know if it's me or you, Jen, but you're a little fuzzy there. Talk about the place what?
Talk about, I'm sure it's me, because you're not fuzzy for me, Sherry, so do let me know. Thank you. Talk about the place of the, and I know it's tricky to talk about for all the reasons you just said, but it's very inspiring and important. The place that supporting practice financially has in each of our practice. If that makes sense.
Oh, well, yeah. One of the things that we've been doing recently at the monastery is opening it up for people to participate more in the physical well-being of the monastery, right? Mm-hmm. So, again, you know, without communication, you see, we get ourselves into these places. So, start of the year, we're just killing ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to get 320 acres ready for people to come and stay there. And then, again, I think it was Ashwini who said, well, you know, why don't we have some retreats? And the focus of those retreats will be being together, practicing together, and taking care of the monastery, our spiritual home. Well, great idea. You know, people come. We have a fabulous time, and we take care of the place. The place looks beautiful. Everybody, nobody's worked half to death. And people really feel like, this is my place. You know, I built that fence, I painted that whatever, you know, all those paths, I weed-eated those. And it's just a completely different, it's a difference between staying in a hotel and having your own home.
Yes, exactly so. Right, so that's the perfect analogy, isn't it? That when it's a completely different relationship with practice, and it's like what I was hearing in that is there's the two sides of the duality. So, you know, I'm a big donor, and so then it's my practice. So you were talking about that earlier. And then the other side of the duality is like, well, other people, and they really, and I'm kind of an outsider. But this place where each of us is doing what we can do in the way that makes sense for us right now, it's ours.
Yeah.
Ours.
Yeah, exactly. And the continuing conversation is how we can talk about how that changes for us over time by bringing conscious awareness to it, all of it, all of it. So when we were doing the Africa campaign this last year, and people were coming up with these outrageous fundraisers. And my favorite was, you know, if all of my friends will come over and help me move, then I'll donate what I would have paid the movers, right? I mean, that's just one of those, woo, talk about outside our normal way of thinking. And it's just, it's really brilliant. And so if we have this kind of cause that speaks to our heart, or that we, it is ours, right? This is my practice. So I'm now thinking in terms of how can I support my practice? Well, I want to go on a retreat in a really beautiful cush place where, you know, I don't have to cook or, you know, clean the kitchen. Okay, that's great. And I would also like to participate in one of the retreats where I take care of the monastery.
That is all part of it.
All part of it.
Yeah, all each one of those experiences provides something.
And people are very creative. You know, when we put out that list of ideas that we had for how we could, you know, bump up the proceeds a little without hurting anybody, you know, people come up with ideas and other things that we've never thought of. And great, we're a team.
Yeah.
Let's do this together. And the point that you made a little bit ago is that it's how we move from, oh, well, you know, that's their practice, to it's my practice. I Sangha, yeah, this is my Sangha. I belong here.
I'm part of, so when I get that peace quote every day, I realize I'm part of making that, having that go out to thousands of people across the globe. I'm part of making that happen.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it feels good. It feels, the heart just loves it.
Exactly. It's so like everything, right? You know, oh, we're not to talk about money. I don't want to talk about money. But it's not about the money. But when you turn and talk about it, there's so much to see. It's such a rich thing because we're told not to look there.
To separate. Right. Well, money and spirituality, those are money and religion. Those don't go together. We have so much evidence of that. It's just, well, we have evidence of money being a temptation for people everywhere. So let's look at it instead of deciding where it belongs and where it doesn't and letting it live in darkness. Let's bring it out into the light and see everything about it.
Yep. So as you're saying that, Sherry, one thing I realize is I don't know where to point people to this letter. I don't know if it's archived, so we'll find that out. But
Ashwini is listening to us. You will probably have that information before you finish that sentence. If not, certainly Michael will have it before open air is finished tonight. So
absolutely.
No problems there. Yeah.
Good. Because you mentioned a couple of the ways, the creative ways that Bob and Ashwini and team had come up with, and there are a few more. So, you know, just for folks to be able to go back and look at that. So it's fun.
And who knows? There might have been somebody who missed it.
Right.
You never know.
Exactly. Could happen.
We don't want anybody to miss out.
We don't. So, Sherry, anything else before we let you and Michael proceed with the show?
Not really. I really appreciate the reminder that we don't want to leave anything in that can't talk about it, embarrassing, feel bad, judgmental, critical, you know, any of those kinds of dark corners in conditioned mind. We just want to find the courage to bring it up and bring it out. And the thing that I think is true about this practice, I don't know if somebody disagrees, they can let me know. But I think it's a very open, welcoming place to talk about anything. And so the voices will say, you can't say that, you can't talk about that. Yeah, you can. I was just writing about it, as a matter of fact, before this call. The combination of clarity and kindness. You know, if I have a voice in my head that has something about religion or spirituality and money, you know, and I want the keyboard over to ego to write, you money-grubbing so-and-sos, you know, that's probably not what we're talking about. Although, you know, it still would be received and probably actually responded to with kindness. But what we can do is talk about our process, get clear on that, share that with somebody, and use it as an opportunity to keep in practice. So we can have clarity about anything, and it can happen in loving kindness. We just practice risking that. And every time it happens and it works, then those muscles get a little stronger.
Yeah, I mean, we could have three more good news updates on that topic. Wow. Because, yeah, just briefly, that's such an invitation, because when people do that and they have that courage and they have that process conversation, even when the voices are telling them not to, we all get so much out of that.
Oh, so, yeah, that first person who steps forward and I get to say, ooh, I've got some of that going too.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Exactly, because the only way the voice can deny that kindness and can deny, you know, can keep that conversation basically like, oh, God, see, they're asking for money and this and that. The only way it can maintain that is if I don't put my hands up metaphorically, if I don't speak up. But once I do, that's it. Then the kindness is revealed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
So the love of money may be the root of all evil, but talking about money might be a path to awakening. So there. Thank you, Jen.
All right. Thanks, Sherry. And we'll turn it over to you, Michael, to start the show.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Sherry.
Well, and you're welcome, and here we go.
And here we go. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And that was a very fun conversation you had there.
Yeah. Oh, you know, the things we don't understand are really fun until we bring it into awareness practice. All those
you blanked
things
out
are not
just
supposed
for
to,
you blanked out just for a second.
All those things we're not supposed to talk about. You know,
yes.
We start talking about them and we realize, oh, well, that's kind of fun and interesting.
Yes, yes. And what I just saw as you said that is that the way we talk about it and the way it's received or facilitated by you or the facilitator is that this is a normal topic that we can talk about. You know, we don't get all tense and you know, rigid and upset. That's
twisted.
What makes it work.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So if it's something that's a part of everybody's life, I think we could call that normal.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Well, and I remember you saying that what we're doing in practice, a lot of it is saying, you know, what you're experiencing is really normal, actually. It's just that we don't realize it because we're so stuck in that world of ego that we don't have a broader perspective.
Yes, and you know, Michael, the thing that people don't realize, I think, a lot of people don't realize about Zen, is that Zen is direct experience. That's what our practice is. We're practicing to let go of everything and have a direct experience of life. So having a direct experience of our experience is a really important place to start. Now, that's not where we're going to end up, but it's an important place to start. So getting to the place of saying, this is what I'm experiencing. It's not about figuring out if that's right or wrong, good or bad. It's just, this is what I'm experiencing. Great, let's explore that.
Yes, yes, yeah, exactly, exactly. It's great.
Yeah.
And I have announcements here.
All right.
Take a courageous dive into emotions you've never been allowed truly to examine at the When You're Falling Dive Retreat, guided by you, Sherry, and Ashwini in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
This retreat runs from April 9th through 14th and includes yoga, delicious vegetarian meals, and individual guidance with you, Sherry.
Yes, it does.
Yes. And Reflective Listening Buddies is a powerful support for conscious, compassionate awareness, requiring participants to show up to practice being present on a weekly basis. And a new quarter begins April 15th. Step away from the pressures of day-to-day living and immerse yourself in a monastic community completely focused on waking up. The Your Practice Retreat, April 28th through May 5th at the Zen Monastery Peace Center near Murphy's, California, provides individualized support with what you choose as your practice focus for your stay. This retreat is a prerequisite for anyone considering being a first-time visiting monk.
Mm-hmm.
Recording and listening group classes will train participants to access and receive guidance from the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. New 6-week classes start April 16th and 18th. Sangha will
too.
Be, yes, they are. Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
All these things that you're mentioning, these are all a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Sangha will be celebrating the guide's birthday, that's your birthday, Sherry, on April 21st with a day of awareness practice workshops. Mark your calendars. Registration information will be coming soon.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That sounds
so
exciting.
When you're having a big birthday, you want to have a good party. And that's what this is going to be. It's going to be a good party. The details of it are very fun, so I do hope people will tune in for that.
Yes, I'm sure it will be coming to our email inbox soon.
Mm-hmm.
And for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make a show and get in the queue by pressing *6 and then 1. And a focus on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes is great. And Sherry, we are going to start today with a question from a listener that was written in.
Oh, fun.
Yes. I'm wondering if Sherry has a Zen perspective on the difference between secrecy and privacy. I'm looking at my process around secrecy and privacy. Privacy seems like life. Secrecy seems like egocentric karmic conditioning / self-hate. But I'm curious about her perspective. What is the privileged environment? That seems like privacy to me, Desho.
That's great. I love that connection, don't you? Because without that, Yeah, it would be a whole different conversation. So, yeah, yeah. I bet with secrecy there's a lot more conversation.
Oh, no? Yes. Internal.
So I have to, yeah, internal. Yeah, yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I have to remember, I have to watch, I have to be reminded, I have to go over it, have to talk about the dangers and the threats and all of that. And with the privileged environment, of course, we just simply leave people alone. And so it's much, secrecy, yes, he's right. Jakey, I don't know who that is right that that the privileged environment really takes care of a need for secrecy. So, like at the monastery, you know, there's a private sign at the front of the paths to people's hermitages. So, they, you know, we don't have to have locks on the doors because nobody is going to go into anybody else's space. So, we don't ask personal questions of anyone, and so people don't need to have to be careful and hide things and worry about what they're going to be asked and how they're going to answer and that sort of thing. So, yes, privacy. I don't know. I've never – that's interesting. After I'll look to my sources and explore what the dictionary would say about privacy. But I bet the privileged environment goes a long way toward making that happen.
Yes. Yes, that's really interesting. What I saw as you were speaking, Sherry, is that with secrecy, you know, apparently we're not saying stuff out loud, so there's nothing external, but the internal conversation is just taken over completely.
Yeah.
So
which feels awful.
Yes.
Right, which feels awful. You know, with this communication book that I'm working on, I can barely get to external conversations because there's just everything is what's going on in the head. I mean, people, you know, so we did a whole email class, right, on communication, and people almost never talked about actual communication with another human being. When you were doing the reflective listening, talking to people about the class, I thought that I'm talking constantly about reflecting, you know, learning to be with somebody and reflect what they're saying and ask questions that for more information, that sort of thing. Because as far as I can tell, what's going on with just about everybody all the time is a conversation in the head that really precludes conversations with anybody else. So, you know, after I'm listening to these secrecy conversations in my head for a few years, I would imagine I would become downright paranoid because everybody is trying to find these things out about me and delve into things I don't want, you know, and actually have that going on outside of my head.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
It's astounding. So if we only ever had conversations with real, actual people outside of our heads, it would be interesting to know. And of course, if we included the privileged environment and we used our facilitation skills, I wonder how many issues that are really a struggle inside the head would just simply disappear.
I'm sure it would be a lot of them, if not all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay, Sherry, let's talk to our first caller.
Okay.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Lorraine in Connecticut.
Hey, Lorraine.
Hi, Lorraine.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, I'm just felt myself, you know, getting so here and enjoying the conversation so far so much, even though the content is not about what I was thinking of talking about tonight at all, of course. so much of the process is.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this experience last week around being on Project How You Do Anything Is How You Do Everything. And it was really some anxiety and reviews around talking on the call. And so here I am on a call again.
Did you listen to that call?
I did.
And how were you? How were you?
Nothing awful in it.
Uh-huh. You seem fine and intelligent and making complete sentences and all of that, contrary to what the voices would want you to believe.
Exactly. And also, sharing what was my genuine experience of practicing. And so as much as the voices had things that it wanted to say about how, you know, what I decided to share or how I shared or how it was, you know, perceived or all of the things it was trying to comment on, it, as I listened to it again, I mean, I could see that it was me participating and sharing what my my experience had been. And so it was helpful to listen to it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just astounding, isn't it, that voice in the head? It is truly an amazing thing because the conversation was over, right? It's not like you could change anything. You know,
right.
If it had been, if you had just babbled, it's not like you could have done anything about it, right? It just becomes clear that there's nothing to it except taking your attention, torturing you if possible, making you feel bad, and keeping your attention on it. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Had nothing else to say to you, did it?
No, and I had this. I was practicing with it that day because as soon as the call ended, I could feel the sensation that was like, oh no, you know, you got to, it's something, you know, that sense of, that something was wrong. And it was just not even immediately, like, I had no idea what I could have actually possibly said or done wrong, just this feeling of worry about it. But
God.
Then I had this afternoon of doing some really lovely things. Like I was meeting a friend for lunch right away and I completely forgot about it. And then I went to yoga and did a little bit of work at the yoga place. And so again, it's all out of, you know, I'm really in the next things and it doesn't have my attention. And then I got home and it was about 6 hours later and I had a friend staying with me, which was also a good thing, but there was a little bit of, you know, a person who I don't normally share space with was living in my apartment for 10 days. So, of course, things that happen that are fine. And the second I walked in the door, that same feeling that had been gone for 6 hours of like, you need to figure out what you did wrong was back instantly.
Yep. Yes. Isn't that helpful to see? It's lurking, isn't it?
Yes.
It's just waiting. Yeah? And as soon as there's the slightest opening, in it comes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, two things about that that to me are really important for us to catch on to. So, number one, it does that. It lurks. It's not, I mean, you weren't thinking about it, but conditioned mind was holding it. Right? So as soon as there's an opening, as soon as you're not focused on something else, boom, here it comes. And so what there was a danger of there is that you would have just been present. So while you're at yoga, you know, it's, I bet, operating kind of quietly in the background. Well, this, that, you need to do this, do that, that, do how, oh, what, bye, boom, so just that nattering that goes on, You know, same mm-hmm. with your friend. You're having lunch. You're engaged in that, but the nattering is going on. Okay, are you aware that there's that dual action thing going on?
Yeah. Although, I mean, there. I guess it's hard to say for sure right in this moment. But when I was with the, yes, I do feel it going back and forth.
Yeah. It's not dominant under those right. circumstances, yeah. but it's there. And so then you walk into your apartment, or even on the drive home, right? You're in danger of being present, of being in a quiet moment where there's nothing going on, and mm-hmm. in it leaps. Don't forget. You need to feel that. You need to worry about this. This is a problem.
I see what you're saying. So there was a sense with those things taking my attention, and then here's this space that's coming that could just be a space of being present or resting without something that yes. I'm going to give attention to, and so that's the opportunity for it to
that's
come
right.
back in.
Because it's not, what it's not going to allow is for you simply to be there present to life. That's the moment in which you could have turned attention to the mentor, or you mm-hmm. could have, right? You could
yeah.
have had a little conversation with Lorraine about what a great day she had and how much she appreciates this and that and, you know, those kinds of things. And that's the moment that conditioning leaps in with, don't forget, there are problems. Let me list
right.
them for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was that call this morning, and then there's this person staying in your apartment, and there's this, and there's this, and there's this, and there's this, and there's this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good
and
to
so
see.
Do I understand, I mean, those, there's bound to be those potential things in any day, and this is how this works, you know, to send that ping to my nervous system that, oh, don't forget,
yep.
there's problems. But so is it, and that's not going anywhere, but I am practicing bringing
attention. But you can go somewhere.
Exactly.
That's right.
Okay.
That's yeah. right. So that ping to your nervous system can trigger you to, oh, right, yes, I want to be here. Let's see. Shall I focus on gratitude or beauty or review a kindest moments of my day? Let's see. What would I like to do in this space?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to look around. Yeah? So
yeah.
So it's reminding you, come back here, instead yeah. of go off into feeling bad. It's directing you into feeling good instead of feeling bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll hate that.
Yeah.
All right. Let me
okay.
know how it goes.
I will.
Thank you. Thank you, Lorraine.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Lorraine. And Sherry, I have information here about the letter that you sent out by email that you and Jen were talking about.
Uh-huh.
And the letter is going to go up under the support practice section of the website.
Oh, okay. So go to livingcompassion.org, and there's a support practice section.
Yes.
And we don't know what it's called, but probably an email from Sherry or something like that.
Yes, and also in addition, periodically throughout the year, there's going to be a reminder about all these ways to support practice.
Ah, okay. Oh, very good.
Yeah, we
Lovely.
Have a great team here.
Oh,
yes,
it's outrageous. Yeah.
Yes, it is. And Sherry, we are going to hear from our recording and listening program now, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. Recording and listening is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation in conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, I'm just unmuting you now. So, Sherry, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, great. And, oh, I have a blank screen. Hold on 1 second here. That's better. Okay, you ready, Sherry? Here we go.
I'm ready.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, it's Sarah calling from Iowa City. Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Oh, fantastic.
Welcome.
I'm driving. I just pulled over. Thank you very much. I love that last conversation and love this sangha. It's just amazing to hear people describe, you know, the same situation I find myself in and hear such great guidance on how to deal with it. So, yeah. I was actually calling about the exercise from the How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything. And I wonder if I could talk about it on this show, although there may be some people that were not, are not,
well,
you know, in both
give,
places at once.
Give a lot of, you know, color.
Okay.
And
okay,
catch everybody up.
Okay, so the assignment for yesterday was to write your horoscope, and it was interesting to listen to other people describe what they had done. It was different than my own. I guess what came to mind when I wrote my own horoscope was things you read in the newspaper, you know, sort of forecasting what the year is going to be like. And so I wrote, it was like a letter from the mentor almost saying, this is what, you know, these are all the, you're going to feel more peace than you have felt and more love and more, I don't have it in front of me right now, but it was a lovely, you know, a lovely statement about practice and the gifts of practice.
Yeah, we could say it's a prediction, or we could say actually it's just your experience.
Well, that's my question, because I sometimes in practice feel this phenomena where it feels as if awareness is sort of forecasting the future in a way. And other times, I think though, we're trying to be in the present. And I've heard you sometimes, it's not a correction, but you'll point out to people, no, you're having that experience. Like you're not,
right.
You have that realization. It's already happened. And I wondered, like, I know this is kind of a complicated question, but, you know, is any attempt to look into the future really the present?
Yes. Yes, it is. That's the simple answer to that question. And so if you weren't having that experience now, that is not what you would have written, right? And we know that. So all we're ever doing is looking at our current experience. And then we can project that into, in quotes, the past or, in quotes, the future. But it's always what's going on with us right now.
Wow. It's really like tips everything on its axis in a way. It feels like,
And you know, Tara, because you're doing practice, There's also a way in which we could say it's probably true, even though we know there's no such thing as the future. If you go back a year in your life, you were probably then having less experience of love and peace and joy and gratitude and those things, less than you are now. Do you think that's so?
If I look back a year ago, I think I don't know if there. Now I'm starting to wonder: is there a past? I don't know, but I would say yes.
Yeah, because every day our awareness is expanding.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're in a way we could say that we're more capable of love. We're more capable of kindness or peace or joy or gratitude or whatever that is. They're all the same thing, of course. We just give them different names, sort things out, you know. Yeah, they're all the same experience, right? And so we can guess that a year from now, the same, you know, that same expanding process is going on. It's still going to be now, just as it was now then, a year ago.
Right.
So even though what we're talking about is an illusion of a past, an illusion of a future, if you look at the Sarah, I don't know, what is it, March 20th or something, 2018, March 20th, 2017, she was there where she was having the experience she was having now, because it was now, then.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And so she has seen, over this last year, she has seen a lot. She has grown and changed a lot. Right?
Right. It's just sort of amazing because the expansion can happen so instantly. Like if I say the experience I'm thinking about in the future is happening right now, the expansion is right there in that instant.
Yes.
And
exactly so.
Yeah.
Yep. And which is why we want to be really careful about what we're saying.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Which is why, so on the, we were talking on the show this morning about, Bev was giving us the, I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, I love that. Love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really happy to be here. And to say that, what we were pointing at, of course, is in order to say that, I have to be here, right? And I'm here, and I'm happy to be here. And so I say that, and the fact that I say that tells me I'm happy to be here. And so it's this kind of circular process, okay?
Yeah,
and it's very much... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, it's exponential.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it is, we could say, the reverse of what we were just talking about with Lorraine. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So she gets that ping to the nervous system that says, oh, God, there's something wrong. You need to feel bad about something. Here, let me help you figure out what that is. Let me tell you some stories about some things that are wrong, so that you'll know that you should feel that. And when we do that,
we build that.
It doesn't take us any time at all to feel bad. Now, people will believe, well, I was feeling bad, and that's what started that train of thought. That is so chicken and egg. Okay? Yeah, the attention goes there. There's that ping. The attention goes there. That's what it means. I'm in the story. I feel bad. Okay? If that ping tells me, that's right. I need to get here. Here. Oh, I'm happy to be here. Now the wheel of karma, that's the image that the Buddha used, right? So the wheel of karma is rolling along there, feeling bad, feeling bad, feeling bad, feeling bad. Because that's what conditioned mind is doing. It's just constantly looking for what's wrong. Something's wrong. It's not enough. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then what we're doing in practice is bringing that to a halt, and we're turning it in the opposite direction. We're heading away from suffering. Oh, this is great. We're going in this direction. I'm happy to be here. This is wonderful. What's beautiful? What am I grateful for? What do I love? What's true? What's true about my life? People, again, on that, you know, what would it take to make your life perfect? And people get to, well, I could make a big list from conditioned mind, or I could just realize, my life is perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have to say the book, that the What Universe Are You Creating, is such a wonderful, incredible tool for anyone who wants to, yeah, expand their recording and listening practice and drop into that joy of living. Thank you for that.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. We don't hear a lot about that that little practice tool, but it is a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's probably my favorite of all. Yeah. Yeah. It just creates I start it with it every morning, and it just
sets you up. It starts that wheel of karma turning in the direction you want to go in, away from suffering. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you so much. And thank you to Sangha, because it's just incredible. So grateful to everybody who called in and shares their experience. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Go happy.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for joining us, Sarah. And Sherry, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry and Michael, it's Sridevi in snowy Philadelphia.
Hey, Sridevi.
Hey.
Wow. See, you should come back to California, really.
I was actually just thinking about that. The more the days go by, the more I go, I was there, wasn't I? It was real.
What was I thinking? Yes. No, it's beautiful, I bet. Isn't it beautiful?
It is beautiful, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just calling to check in, and I so appreciate that previous conversation, because, you know, the energy in the body and the story that follows the energy would have me believe that I am just not doing well. And just that phrase, I am so happy to be here. I said it out loud, I said it out loud while I was listening to the conversation, and I just felt the most beautiful shift in the body. And I just thank you for that.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. That's it. We all thank Bev. You know, I don't know if we can turn that into a peace quote, but something. I think it's going to be along the lines of go happy, right? It's going to become a definite part of our practice, because that's it. I'm so happy to be here. And I'm here, and I'm happy.
Yeah, and what's just dropping in around that is, you know, there's been just, of course, the incessant conversation from conditioning, and it's not even so much a conversation as just a feeling, and it's an energy in the story, the sensation attached to the energy or the story that I'm just not doing well. And then when I'm doing the practice, and I'm doing how you do anything is how you do everything, and I'm meditating, and I go, that's just not true. And I think the hang up is
your experience conditioning.
Yeah, I'm not, but that feeling is still there. It's almost like the two callers ago, that lurking. It's just lurking there. And the I'm so happy to be here, what really resonated with me is I remember where I was a year ago. And I go, oh, I am really happy to be here because I know what it was like to really not be here for a very long time. And so that moment of I'm so happy to be here, because it's not I am happy to be here because anything in my life is a certain way. I'm just happy to be here in this moment. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, Sridevi, I think that, of course, what you're closing in on there is there's the feeling, and I'm conditioned to believe that feeling means something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So as with Loren, that feeling, you could translate that story that goes with the feeling to, aha, boy, that's an old karmic albatross that I around any longer. That feeling, boy, that's that karmically conditioned feeling in the body that means I should be unhappy, and you know I'm not. So thank you for that little reminder. Now, where's the joy? And
yeah,
use it. Use it to take yourself to the place that is true in the way that you did with that, I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, and it actually just reminds me, I think it was on the radio show, the Daily Radio Show last week, somebody said something that I think I ended up listening to it. I had three or four times about there's what I know is true, and then there's not, and then there's how conditioning is feeling. And so I went, wait. So here's what I know is true. I'm participating every day. I'm meditating. I'm doing these things. I feel this connection. And then there's that feeling, and that's not me feeling it. That's conditioning having a feeling, and they're two separate things. And that was also so helpful to hear someone say that. I was like, oh, that's big. That was big for me too. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's similar to the one that we talk about on occasion of I'm not feeling love.
Mm.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that going to that place of love is not a feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, love is a behavior. love is something we do, even though doing is so much the realm of ego. This is different, right? But it's a way that we are. And so in that same way, maybe conditioning is feeling unloving or conditioning is not feeling love. Okay, well, that makes sense because conditioning isn't love. Conditioning is the absence of love. It's the absence of joy. It's the absence of life.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, all that makes sense. It would feel bad. It does feel bad. That's what it is.
Yeah. So I guess I
so here we are.
I am so happy to be here.
I'm so happy
and
that you're
you.
Here. Yeah, thank you, and stay warm.
I will. Thank you so much.
California girls out there in the snow, you know, it's a scary, dangerous thing. So bundle up.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. All right. Take care.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Sri Devi from the snow. And, Sherry, we have time for at least one more caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Diane from Not Snowy, Colorado.
Well, hello there.
How are you, Michael?
Excellent, thank you. How are you?
I'm happy to be here. I love that.
And is it snowy where you are?
Nope.
No, no snow. Okay.
No, well, 50s and sunny.
I guess we have to go to Philadelphia to get the snow.
I think so. Well, I've been really appreciating, as always, the conversations that you've had so far. Well, all the time. I mean, the things that people say that are so helpful to me, and then your wisdom that comes from them that compounds that. And here's my question. I don't even know how to phrase it, but depression has plagued me throughout my life. And I've been taking little notes as you've been talking to other folks. And I'm thinking that what you would say about that is that's just conditioning. And conditioning is depressed. And conditioning is creating the voices that lead you to feeling that way. Is that accurate?
That's pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when I am in conditioning's clutches in that way, mm-hmm. it's very hard for me to see my way to hear out of it.
Yep.
And so I'm very interested in, you know, I can have this mental, this construct that we just mentioned about how I get there. And when I am there, I mean, when I'm only sort of, when I'm mostly here, I can bring myself back here. But when I'm deep in the depths of conditioning's depressive clutches, I really have a very hard time moving from that place.
Yes. So and in fact, I'm going to bet that conditioning uses the fact that you have that information against you. Because you should be able to get out of it. You know what's causing it. You know what the answer is. Did it ever do that one to you? That's a popular one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, self-hate gets you there
and
then it beats you up for being there.
That's right. Yes. So I would say you are spot on about the whole thing. Do you have a recording and listening practice?
I do.
Okay. Is it a good, deep, solid practice?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. And does it assist you when you're in those places?
Sometimes. Sometimes it turns me around, and sometimes I'm in a maze and I can't get out.
Okay. So I'm going to project this. When it works, it works. When it doesn't work, it's because it talks you into quitting. It talks you into this isn't working. So the way that goes is, I'm depressed, and I'm listening to a recording about what is so, what is true. Okay, listening to a recording where I'm talking to the mentor, and the mentor is encouraging me toward all of these wonderful things that take care of me and help me get present. And the voice of conditioning, a la the way we were talking about it with Loren, it's operating in the background. So I'm listening to this recording, but conditioned mind is constantly saying, are you still depressed? Is it working? Are you still depressed? And each time I look, I'm still depressed. It's not working. And eventually, I get talked into quitting.
Yes, and that happens sometimes. And then sometimes, I can't find the mentor from that place.
Well, that's why you make the recordings when you're not there.
So it's not new recordings, it's going back to some of those.
That's right.
Other ones that
That's
I've
right.
renamed,
right.
highlighted, and put in a special place.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you listen to those over and over and over and over and over until they have talked you out of that pit. Then you're in the place, again, we were talking about a little where as soon as you realize you're out of that pit, here it comes again. Yeah, well, but that doesn't mean that, blah, 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 and it's going to try to talk you right back into the pit. And that's where directing the attention is critical. Okay, so you see it coming. You can see it coming. You keep your attention with the recordings, with the mentor. And the commitment is, it doesn't matter how long it takes. You're going to stay with that practice until you're back and here. And then you're going to record about what happened.
Okay.
You see the...
So I'm going to listen to those recordings of all the insights, and I'm not going to give up on that. And
that's right.
Once I feel like I'm out of the pit, I'm going to record about that experience.
That's right. About getting out of it.
Yes.
About being pulled down and being pulled in and what happened to you. Not letting those voices talk, of course, but what you saw, what you realized, the importance of, and what on the recordings were, was particularly helpful and meaningful to you under those circumstances. Maybe you make more recordings based on that. Add them to your "When It Has Me in the Pit" section, and you keep going like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got a plan. Thank you for
got
helping.
A plan. Yeah. Well, because, you know, so I don't know how much you know about me, but, I mean, depression was my life, right? A long history of super depressed people. My grandmother killed herself. My, you know, on and on and on. My mother was depressed, profoundly depressed until she died in a car accident at age 48. So, you know, I get depression. And what I realized at the bottom of the worst depressions that I realized that if I didn't use that language, I was one step toward where I wanted to be. I would be, now I don't know how it manifests for you. I was not one who had bad thoughts or sad thoughts or any of that. It took me forever to realize what self-hate was, but I didn't have any energy. I really thought I was terminally ill, right? Because nobody could find anything physically wrong with me, but I had no energy. I mean, I'd just crawl back and forth from a chair to the bathroom to the, you know. And so realizing that talking about it in terms of low energy helped me to focus on the energy that I had, and to use the energy that was available to me to do what was possible for me to do. And in doing what was possible for me to do, I had more energy. And that's how I caught on to the fact that my depression, was not a lack of energy, but imploded energy. And so catching on to that then, I realized I got to get up, I got to get out of the chair, I've got to start walking, I've got to start moving, I've got to move that energy, because that energy, that stuck energy, was connected to those, to that dark place that rendered me immobile. So that's just an encouragement to look at the language that's used, at the beliefs that are held about it, and moving to a place of the only thing that matters here is freeing her from this pit. That's the only thing that matters, right?
It's totally the only thing that matters. But can I ask you just, I know we're about to end, but you said,
yeah.
I didn't follow you on the language part. You were saying,
calling it depression. Calling it
just
depression.
Just don't label it like that.
Don't label it. Yeah, don't label it. You know, if it's a lack of energy, if it feels like a lack of enthusiasm, then you can pursue what it is that you want to pursue to have more.
Okay, so then you can focus on whatever the opposite is of whatever that more precise label, if you will, is. But depression is like too broad, and it's got all these different manifestations and. So
that's exactly right. It comes with all those meanings, and as you notice, it's kind of a dead end. You know, I'm depressed. Well, okay, all right. Well, there, that's the end of that. But what is the? I'm not as up as I'd like to be. I'm not as lit up as I usually am. So I want to focus on lit up energy. That's what I'm pursuing right now. I'm not feeling enthusiastic, so I want to explore enthusiasm. So what might I be enthusiastic about right now?
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
This was really helpful, and I'm sure it was helpful to a lot of other people.
I bet. And you let me know, okay? Let's keep this conversation going.
Will do.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Diane. Sherry, not only was it a fabulous conversation, but you also stopped right on the hour. So it's a big win-win.
Oh, my gosh. God is good. All right. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry. That was great.
Take care. See you soon. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.